Okay, we're live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest, a returning guest. His name is David Livingston. We talked back in December of 2020 about an excellent six-part book that he published online. And it really was one of my most listened to interviews that I had on my YouTube channel before I got kicked off. But I reached out to him, so I'm delighted to have him back to talk more. And I was looking through some of his stuff, and I had published a book in the interim about kind of the modern far right global movement, really. And I was looking through his stuff and actually gasped about some stuff because I'd researched it, but I hadn't seen the research that he had done. But in the interim, he's also put out this book into a paperback, six-part paperback series that really looks fantastic on the, you know, physically on a bookshelf. It would look fantastic. Great. So I'm delighted to have him back. So David Livingston, welcome back. How have you been?
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, for people who may not have heard our last interview, I think we're like at 10,000 listens on YouTube or close to that. Maybe you could just talk about all your other books. You know, you've written other books, and what led you to put together this really magnum opus, Ordo Ab Chao, and then we can get into some of the subject matter.
Right. So I've been at it for 30 years now, trying to understand the origins of this conspiracy that we are living under. I think what's probably unique about my work is that I trace it, you know, back far back into ancient times. There's a few researchers, authors that I've tried to speculate about some, you know, pretty obscure origins, have put out some theories, but they're usually typically not well substantiated. I've tried to do a very careful job of trying to trace the real trajectory of these ideas, because of course the perpetrators today, they do see themselves as the heirs of a particular age-old tradition. It did exist, did have a history. If you listen to their version of the story, of course, it's somewhere close to the truth, but it's not very accurate. And so I was trying to find what's the real history behind it. And that's why now I've written five books. My first one is The Dying God, A Hidden History of Western Civilization. And that's really the first book that explores the origins, the birth of the occult, and takes us to the French Revolution. My second book was Terrorism Illuminati, which somewhat goes back to, you know, portions of the of what's covered in Dying God, but really uncovers the sort of the birth of Mithraism, the survival of the families behind it, and their evolution to the modern occult establishment, and then of course their relationship with Islamic terrorism and fascism, which we'll probably end up talking about. My next book was Black Terror, White Soldiers, which again expanded a lot further on the topic of the relationship between Islam and fascism, adding in as well, of course, the New Age. The fourth is transhumanism, which is a crucial topic today. If we want to understand the COVID agenda, that's really what it's all about. And so to understand exactly what are the occult roots of transhumanism and what's their millennial agenda. And then finally, what happened is that I had a sneaking suspicion that fascism, you know, from my third book, I began to discover the place of fascism in this story. And I just started digging, and you know, this is how all these books come about. Is I have no plan to write them. It's just I start following a thread, and it just keeps going and going and going. I was hoping I was going to make a small book, and one small book, and now it's six. But really, what's happened is that, you know, all my previous book has given me a grounding, a background, to help me explore, to give me an understanding to explore other subjects, which is why my estimate would be that my recent book, all my other books combined, total to about 15% of the content and topics of my significance of my latest book, which is Ordo Ab Chao. You know, I can't believe that all these years I've been studying this stuff. There's so many topics that I have only discovered for the first time in the last few years, and really blown my mind of their depth of the history and their significance.
Right. I mean, there's a lot there, and you cover so much, and you have a very broad angle on this last book, this six-part book.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you found out that were in this Order of Kao that maybe weren't themes from your earlier books?
Okay. There's a lot. It's not that much time, so I'm going to try to be brief, but there's so many topics to consider. So, for example, one of the most important portions, periods of history that if you go to volume one and you go to, let's say, like the oral. So this is the period, this is like whole gap, a chapter in history, which from what I've seen has been completely forgotten in usual, you know, explorations of occult history. This is the, basically the period of Spain. Of course, Spain at the time, for a period, it was under Muslim domination. There was also a large Jewish community. And the particular Muslim approach to minorities allowed the Jews basically to flourish at that time. In fact, the 9th and 10th centuries of Spain is considered the golden age of Judaism. So this is kind of what the community that really gives birth, that allows really the Kabbalah to emerge. And so what happens is that when the Templars are arrested, where they survive is in Spain. And they survive into a number of orders, like the Order of Montesa, the Order of Calatrava, the Order and the Order of Santiago, and most importantly, the Order of Christ. And so the order, there's a whole other, you know, many tangents we can explore here, but this is really what connects, you know, the Holy Grail and, you know, the Kabbalah and all sorts of other important tangents.
Right, it's super influential. The Kabbalah, my last interview, we were just talking about the Kabbalah, mm-hmm. and apparently Jews at that time considered themselves the best under the Muslims, not under the Christians. They That's thought right. if they just paid the jizya, they were actually more free than mm-hmm. what happened later in Spain, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So they got forced. They either forced conversion or expulsion. Sorry. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's the Jews themselves who called those centuries the golden age of Judaism. So you have the Order of Christ, and the Order of Christ basically becomes responsible for the age of exploration out of beginning out of Portugal, particularly with a guy named Prince Henry the Navigator. And so these families now are all interconnected to the bloodline, the sort of Grail bloodline families in England and France. And this is where you get really the birth of several important families. What's important to remember is that all these families claim descent. Basically, the core ones are claimants of the Kingdom of Jerusalem. So they're basically hereditary kings of Jerusalem. This is beside the fact that the Jerusalem had actually been lost to the Muslims, but they continue to carry their title. So important to understand that the you know, these are families that claim descent from the King of David, from King David.
Right. That's cool. the Queen of England currently. Correct. That line believes right. they're from the throne of David. Sorry.
So it's the Davidic bloodline, right? So basically, the Messiah. So you know what all these families, with the Kabbalah, everything, this whole conspiracy, the whole purpose of it is to fulfill Bible prophecy, right? In their version of it, and that Bible prophecy entails basically the arrival of the Messiah, who then fights Gog and Magog, and establishing of a world kingdom based out of Jerusalem, and the rebuilding of the third temple. And that's why the Templars named themselves Templars after the temple. And that's also why the Masons call themselves Masons, because allegorically they're rebuilding the third temple of Jerusalem. So this is why these families are preserving this line of descent, because they believe that from them the Messiah is going to come. So this is why if you look at a chapter like it's chapter 1, Kings of Jerusalem, it's like one of the later chapters. So this is the chapter really that explains the mythology behind the Priory of Zion. So the Priory of Zion, of course, which is key to modern day fascism. So the Priory of Zion is a myth, a legend that was created by Pierre Plantin in the 20th century, but it's founded on a lot of truth. So Da Vinci in particular, is a very central character. So in this chapter, this is where I trace all the connections of all these people around him, and that he's all connected to a specific number of families. You can see that I've got the genealogical charts there that connect the order of the Garter. Particularly, most important is the order of Golden Fleece. So you have families like the Sforza family, the Est family, the Visconti family, and the House of Savoy. So these are the families who all are tracing their descent to King David. They are also basically the key families that are responsible for preserving the occult tradition. They are, particularly the House of Savoy, are deeply connected with Nostradamus. And of course, Nostradamus is where you get the prophecy of the Grand Monarch, which is what the Prior of Zion is out to complete. This is kind of where you get the relationship now between the connection between the Priory of Zion and the European Union, right?
Wow.
Because this is now where you get, the person who was, expected to serve the role of the Grand Monarch, prophesied by Nostradamus, was Otto von Habsburg. Now, Otto von Habsburg is not only a Knight of Malta, but he is the Grand Master of the Order of the Golden Fleece. And this is really the order that ties all these families together. It's really the central order. These are the families who basically, first of all, what they do is they produce Protestantism. And then out of the Protestant movement, they created Rosicrucianism. And so it's Rosicrucian movement then that creates the movement of Shabtai Zvi, who declares himself Messiah in 1666, deludes about half of the world's Jewish population at the time, until, of course, popular story is when he converts to Islam. And then a lot of people are dismayed and drop out of the movement, but there is a significant segment, one in Turkey called the Domine, and then a significant movement that develops in Poland, which is where you get somebody like Jacob Frank, whose influence basically leads to the Illuminati, and most importantly, a group called the Asiatic Brethren. So the Asiatic Brethren, basically their name is intended to refer to the so-called Eastern mystics that the Templars had come into contact with during the Crusades. So now we want to talk about, because we want to talk about the role of fascism. So that's basically the underlying background, right?
It's a deep background, right?
It is. Deep background. So Otto von Habsburg was one of the founders of a group which is basically the umbrella organization of the Fascist International, which is called the Circle, the Pinay Circle.
The Circle, right.
So it's founded by him as well as Antoine Pinay and Jean Violet. So that's in my chapter on the volume one. That's where it begins. Which so is
the Circle is very important. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's actually mentioned in one of the James Bond books by Fleming.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. No, there's a Lacerc. And it just came up because there's a member of the parliament. Somebody in the UK right now was a member of the fascist Lacerc. Like literally, I read about it 2 days ago.
Excellent.
So what chapter am I supposed to go to?
There's volume three. And it's one of the last chapters, which I think is European Union. Gotcha. Because basically, Antoine Pinay was simultaneously one of the founders of the Bilderberg movement. And so there's a whole other story here, which I won't get into, but basically a couple of chapters before that, which is very, very important, very crucial to the story, is the Vichy government in France. So when the Nazis occupied the northern portion of Germany, they created an occupied government there, but then the southern portion of Germany created a pro-Nazi government based out of Vichy. And so this government basically was a synarchist coup, and synarchists, of course, are followers of a guy from the turn of the from the late 1800s. His name is Alexander Saint-Yves d'Alvèdre, and so this is one of the most important occult organizations. And basically, they believe that there was a society, civilization that lived in a hollow earth, and they adopted a political system known as synarchy.
Synarchy, right. Yeah. Isn't that supposed to be that the place in the north? It's not Atlantis, it's the Hyperboreas in the earth.
Yeah, so there's two places. There's Agartha and, There's Thule.
Sorry to interrupt here, Dave, but this is literally what I just like saw yesterday, mentioning the CERC. This guy Nadeem Zawahi was the education secretary. Is part of an opaque transatlantic right-wing group, which includes members of the intelligence community, has been funded by CIA, the CERC. That's him right there. Wow. Yeah. So anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, thanks. Something I have to look up. So yeah, this organization is key, right? So where was I?
You're talking about the Synarchy.
Yeah. So you get the Synarchists in France, and basically you get all these philosophers who are part of these various right-wing movements out of France. And it's basically the dream of creating a European Union was really a Synarchist mission. And that's why it's like these philosophers that come out of, after World War II, who join up with the Bilderberg Group and the CIA, effectively, to take on the plot. And, of course, one of the main architects of the plan was a guy named Richard Kuhnhof-Kalergi.
Kalergi, I've heard that name.
He founded the Pan-European Union with Otto von Habsburg. Right? So basically what happens is that, the Nazis is really the key here. What I follow in my book is is the use really of the Nazis for this particular plot. I mean, as everybody knows, the Nazis were occult Satanists. One of the key influences, of course, was Aleister Crowley. I believe it's very likely he was actually Hitler's handler. Most particularly, I follow the relationship between Hitler and what's called the Cliveden set. So the Roses Round Table has many names, and one of them is Cliveden set, because I think it's beginning in the 20s or 30s, they start congregating at the Cliveden House. Which is owned by Nancy Astor and all her circle of friends. And a lot of them were basically Nazi collaborators. So so basically that's kind of the grounding that really, there's a whole other called tangents that it's not really had time to get into, but of course.
Right, but I mean, that just shows the thoroughness of your research. People have got to go check out this book and get the 6-part series. It looks great. If you're watching YouTube, you can see how clean this looks, and you can get this and add this to your library. Really awesome looking. So, it really is fascinating. Crowley was known to be in Germany from I think 30 to when Hitler came into power. 32,
I think. Yeah,
32. So it was right at the end of the Weimar Republic. Very chaotic time.
Yeah.
And he famously said, before Hitler was, I am.
I was.
Which is,
exactly.
I was, yeah. A really dark, biblically, it's what Christ said before Abraham was, I am. Yeah. So it's a play on that statement before the Sanhedrin. Really potent, dark, heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah,
but I've made the argument that, similar to your statement, which is Hitler was a political Crowley. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
Please continue. Basically,
a product of the Tavistock Institute. So Crowley was also a friend with Erich von Ludendorff, who's both a member of the Thule Society and the Aufbau. And the Aufbau is crucial. But basically what happens is that in World War I, this is what Richard Spence exposed, is that Crowley was in the United States doing black propaganda, but he was actually working for the British Secret Service. And this is a whole network. Basically, his boss was Philip Wiseman, who was another member of the Round Table. And this is the group that connects a whole lot of basically early Zionists, particularly Otto Kahn, Felix Untermeyer, and the House, the Warburgs, and Kudlow Bank. And this is really the group. This is the group
that's amazing.
The birth of the Zionist movement. They are also members of the Golden Dawn. So Otto Kahn.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. I had no idea. I just talked to Spence about his book. So it's interesting. You bring him up, and we talked a lot about Kuhnloeb and Schiff and all these characters.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like just to give to tell you where it goes, basically the park in New York, there's a park in New York named after Felix Untermeyer called Untermeyer Park, right? And that's the park that was exposed in Maury Terry's book about the Son of Sam killings, right?
Totally occult.
Magic rituals that were happening there. So Untermeyer, and it's Maury Terry who mentions that Untermeyer was a member of the Golden Dawn. So you have this whole network of basically Golden Dawn, Satanists, and Zionists who are working during World War I together, collaborating with them is Eric von Ludendorff, as well as von Papen, and as well as George Sylvester Viereck. He's a fascinating character. So George Sylvester Viereck is big. He knew everybody. He was friends with Crowley. He was friends with Einstein, Nikola Tesla, Freud. You know, the list goes on and on and on. Alfred Kinsey. He used to have parties at his flat in New York. He invited all these like crazy crackpots like Kinsey. It's where you get a lot of people from, like the National Renaissance Party were there and stuff like that as well too.
Wow, that's probably worked for Viereck, the fatherland, I think, in the international.
Correct. The title. Exactly. Exactly. So Eric von Ludendorff was a member of what's an organization called Aufbau. Along another member of the key character is Boris Brassel. So Boris Brassel, the Aufbau basically was a white Russian organization that was anti-Bolshevik. And they're the ones who basically were responsible for disseminating protocols. And as I show, you know, I've shown many times before, the protocols were a product of the Rite of Memphis Mizraim and the Israelite Alliance. They seem to have been basically deliberately, you know, leaked by occultists. The lady who introduced it to Sergei Nihilus, her name was Yuliana Glinka, and she was a student of Blavatsky. Part of that whole circle, part of that whole synarchist network that was operating in St. Petersburg. And Spence thinks that Crowley was part of that network as well.
Wow, that's incredible. And there's a lot of occultism there, too, in that kind of the turn of the century Russian.
Yeah, because they were, you know, fomenting the Russian Revolution.
Wow, that's incredible. So, these connections are off the charts.
Yeah. Sorry, so Boris Brassel comes to the United States. So basically what happens is that, so Boris Brassel is the key guy who's disseminating the protocols. And the reason they're using the protocols is because they want to create this notion that the Bolsheviks are, that the Russian Revolution was actually a Jewish Masonic plot. And that they wanted to convince the Germans that they were threatened with the same, basically to use the Nazis for their political purposes. So they're the ones who introduced the Nazis. Boris Brassel was working with Henry Ford, and together they're the ones who introduced the protocols to the Nazis. Alfred Rosenberg was also a member of the Aufbau.
Wow, so
that's how you see how they were basically all this orchestration basically to create the Nazis. You know, as a movement, essentially, to
move point it towards the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, pardon?
To move it, to force it towards the Bolshevik revolution. I mean, I think that's what Hitler kept saying. We got to stop this Jewish
Bolshevik. It was a pretext, exactly. Yeah. Which, of course, was in no way the real reason. But if you understand, that's the fascist MO, right? This is what they do, is that they've throughout the century, it's what I call a conspiracy. They cultivate this fear that there is a communist conspiracy, which is Jewish and Masonic, and they've been using the right to maintain this fear, and that's how they push their fascist agenda. So that's what they've done in the United States.
Totally agree with that.
So Boris Brassel comes to the United States, and he becomes the what they call the brain trust of the America First Committee. In America First Committee, so America First is actually a Klan slogan that was used, you know, for 50 years before that time. The America First Committee was created just before World War I to lobby to keep the United States out of World War II, and it was funded by the Nazis. It was composed of the Bund, the Klan, and the Silver Shirts. And the Silver Shirts is a fascinating story because William Dudley Paley, not only is he part of this whole crazy network, but he's also part of the IM network, right? And a mentor to people like George Wilson Hunt, who's one of the first UFO contactees.
Wow.
Right? So that's what I cover in volume 4, the second chapter, which is about extraterrestrials. And that's where you see the whole relationship of basically of the CIA, particularly through Andrea Poharich, and his seances that contacted the Council of Nine, and that entire network that connects all these people who really gave birth to this myth of a UFO phenomenon.
Wow, it goes all the way back, comes out of the movements in the Empire. Yeah. Wow, it's really incredible.
Yeah. And so you can follow from that all the way up to people like Stephen Greer. Right?
Wow, yeah. I mean, it's so you can just trace it all the way back. It's really incredible. And not a lot of people know about the Silver Shirts. It's kind of an important pre-war,
amazing story. Amazing story. So the Silver Shirts, basically all the Silver Shirts, the Yedda guy, his name is Volume 3, the next chapter.
Theriosophy, is that where we're at?
No, sorry, Volume 4.
Or,
and I think it's
Old Right.
In God We Trust.
In God We Trust. Okay.
Yeah. So you get his name is Robert Lefevre, and he founds a school called a Freedom School to teach neoliberal economic philosophy. Because out of this fascist movement of the America First, you get the American Security Council. So the American Security Council is called the heart of the military-industrial complex, which is why they kept the fascist MO. They brought it to the United States, and they maintained the same concept, that they created this fear of communism so that they could justify the military buildup for their own
profit. They use that communism.
Right. All the time. So this is really how they create the military-industrial complex, which is currently perpetrating COVID right now, right? It's basically the slow appropriation of the American economy through a small group of corporations. And so neoliberalism is the argument that they use to remove regulations, to remove government involvement in the economy, so that they can expose everything to corporate.
Right, so they can aggregate power to the corporates, right? So everything moves up to the top of the pyramid. Exactly. That's exactly what happened under COVID.
So this is why you find them all involved. This is the whole network. This is a chapter in the old right. It's all behind the neoliberal movement, particularly people like Murray Rothbard, Ludwig von Mises, all these guys, right?
Right. So and, all the heroes of the right, the economic right. heroes of the right.
And most importantly, the family. Right. So if anybody's interested, there's a very weak documentary on Netflix about the family. Really a whitewash. If you want to understand it better, read Charlotte's book on the same. And it's a fascinating story of the net worth of these people, from what I'm seeing, as well as to German fascism and so on.
They're more sinister than they kind of look like an outwardly Christian kind of
yes
male club or fraternity. Yeah. But
so basically what they did is they created a Christian right. So, you know, the problem was is that when they were trying to do this buyout of the American industry, they were up against the Christian community because Christians taught charity. And the Christians used to teach what's called a social gospel, which is basically, the need for charity. So basically, they kind of had to reverse. They didn't know how to co-opt the Christian community. So this is why the National Association of Manufacturers, which is made up of all these families, the Mellons, the DuPonts, you know, Rockefellers, and so on.
Right. The PU Trust, all that stuff. PUs. Yeah.
So they're the ones who decided that what they were going to do is that they were going to, you know, change the interpretation of Christianity to turn it basically into a religion of selfishness. So this is how they managed to disguise it as a Christian agenda. And that's basically how the family was created. And that's why basically since that time, the Christian right has been in the service of neoliberalism, which basically teaches the opposite.
That's so true. I don't know if you should listen to that interview I did with Mike Bennett, because he goes into that part of the kind of how Christianity changed, how he morphed it, but really deep down, and a lot of we talked about spiritual mobilization, pew, really fascinating.
Great. Yeah, because one of the key members, you've got what's his name, the famous speaker there. Reverend Billy Graham.
Oh, Jim Billy Graham. So all those Billy guys Graham. Came have been influenced by this foundational post World War II, kind of change, fascist change, and how Christianity got changed. Yeah. They're all out there, part of that tree. They're a branch of that tree.
Billy Graham was a Mason, and he was a member of the family. So this is the whole group, particularly the family. They're the ones who created the net. So basically, you know, even though they're the ones who got God We Trust put on the dollar bill, because the United States has been a secular nation. The people always believe that, you know, America is a Christian nation, and the Christian right has basically used that as an argument. The fact is, it's the family that was responsible for creating a change of perception in the 50s. And it did that by creating National Prayer Breakfast, which basically integrated Christian religion into the government. They also teamed up with people like with Hollywood, particularly all those famous Christian movies or biblical movies of the 50s and 60s, like Ben-Hur and Ten Commandments and all those ones, like teaming up with Cecil B. DeMille to basically push the religious agenda, which they could use then to co-opt into the liberal movement. So that's Norman Vincent Peale. That's Donald Trump's mentor, one of two of his mentors.
Right, he said, that's right. He said he was, Vincent Peale was his guy.
That's right.
So he's right out of that vein too. He really is. I mean, I would not, I think he says he's a Christian, but.
No, these guys are Gnostics.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're Satanists. So yeah, so basically, so that's where you get, so yeah, you get the first committee, the American Security Council. American Security Council, basically what happens there is that out of there, there's an organization called, this is in the next chapter, volume four.
Novus Ordo Liberalism?
Chapter seven, Red Scare. So this chapter I talk about, so there's Roy Cohn with McCarthy.
McCarthy.
Ray Cohn is Donald Trump's
His other influence, right? It was Cohn and
Right. In addition to Huxley, he's the true villain of the 20th century, right? He's the guy who was maintaining, operating basically satanic parties, orgies that were attended by Son of Sam.
Wow. So it was him.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that.
And it's his pedophile network, which gives birth to all the other ones, which you can trace all the way down to Epstein.
I had heard that. Yeah. I heard that he was running a pedophile number. He used to hang out with one porn stars. I forgot the really famous porn star that he was friends with. He used to go on flights with this character.
Yeah.
It was John Holmes. He was friends with John Holmes. How weird is that?
Right.
Yeah.
He was friends with everybody. I mean, he was a really important guy. So he was a member of an organization called American Jews Against Communism. And this was a Sabbatian network, and they're the ones who convinced McCarthy to hire Roy Cohn. And so basically it was like a right-leaning Jewish network. And so it's basically the guys from that organization then who teamed up with the John Birch Society and then joined into William F. Buckley's National Review.
Wow, man. This is too much. It's incredible. It's incredible. So we could just do a show on this character right here on the right. I mean,
I'm telling you, we can.
He died of AIDS. I think he died of AIDS.
He did, like, of course. He was a notorious homosexual.
Okay, yeah.
So. Him and apparently he had blackmail on Hoover as well, too. That's a fascinating story. So Roy Cohn, apparently, the claim is that he was also a member of Permandex, which was behind the JFK assassination.
Right? Wow. Well, Clay Shaw, right?
Exactly.
Clay Shaw was a member of Permandex, right?
Yeah. So the JFK assassination basically ties in all these people together. So basically, you know, the JFK assassination was a plot that included Permindex, Roy Cohn, the American Security Council, and a large part of the John Birch Society. And so out of this network, because what Boris Brassel does when he comes to the United States is he brings the Russian Knights of Malta, which become known as the Shikshini Knights of Malta.
I've heard that term.
And so basically it's really out of that core that you get, you know, all these American fascists. And so out of that group who were conspirators in the JFK assassination, you get what's called a secret team, which was headed by Ted Shackley. And Ted Shackley, that secret team then becomes involved in the Golden Triangle, a heroin trade with America. And that's really where they give birth to the CIA's narcotic,
you should listen to it because I think I'm going to have John J. McCloy. What was the Albert, the guy who wrote the Golden Triangle, Alfred McCoy. I'll be talking to him. Yeah. So he'll be
trying to talk quite a bit as a source. Yeah.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks. So keep an eye out for that. So I'm hoping to have him on his new book, but we can talk about that too. But I'll tell you a Shackley story. When I was in D.C., I went out with a friend of mine who now works for a George Soros associated thing. We went out to the third edition. Mm-hmm. I'll just shorten the story, but I was with this girl, very well put together, and we were having beers. Bill came. She said, I got it. Whipped out a black Exxon credit card, slapped it down, And I was like, oh, okay, cool. That was nice. Thank you so much for the beer. Bye, left. And my buddy elbows me. Do you know who that is? I said, I had no idea. He said, that's Ted Shackley's daughter.
Daughter,
the blonde ghost. And I was like, I don't know who the blonde ghost is. I mean, who's that? And, well, yeah. now I know a lot more than I did back then. That was 30 exactly. years ago. Sorry.
So wow, that's
these very, connections are incredible.
Yeah. So Ted Shackley's team, they're the one, they start the Gold Triangle trade, which involves a Nugan Hand Bank in Australia, right? Which then evolves into Iran-Contra. But at the same time, there's, I think his name is Frank Turpel, who's a member of Shackley's team. He's the guy who starts a new black pedophile blackmail operation inherited from Roy Cohn. And that's the operation which is behind the Franklin cover-up.
Wow. So that's it. Wow.
Which then, so of course, connects the Temple of Set and Michael Aquino.
Wow, it's incredible. So this Epstein is nothing new. Epstein and Maxwell.
Absolutely not. It's a continuation. It's necessary, right? It's how they operate. There's two things, right? You've got satanic rituals, which is how they believe what they believe they need to do to attain spiritual power, right? And it involves, you know, the most horrific barbarities that you could ever imagine, which is, you know, typically the rape of children, the sacrifice of children. And they believe that this, you know, somehow gives them power. But at the same time, they're using these children, you know, allowing these children to be raped by pedophiles and then filming them and then using that as blackmail to, you know, I think that's how you can explain how so much nonsense gets passed out of Washington.
Right. The corruption and they're not doing. It's not even what they're doing. It's what they're not doing, right?
Exactly.
Like these people are probably owned.
Exactly.
And Virginia Giuffre, she was asked by Epstein and Maxwell to have a baby and then just give the baby to Epstein and Maxwell.
Right. Thanks. Well, that's
like that should chill anybody. Like she writes that in her autobiography. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with the baby, but
yeah,
they were going to pay her off. Here's $50,000. I can't remember the number. You have the baby. Give it to us. No questions asked.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, you know, so in like as I mentioned, so Franklin connects the Temple of Set, right? And Roy Cohn's operation connects to the Process Church, right? Because Son of Sam, Dave Berkowitz, was part of the Process Church.
Right.
And I'm going to give a quick tangent before I come back to my story. But basically, one of the guys who was, you know, the sort of apparently one of the leaders of the satanic cult that Berkowitz belonged to was Roy Radden. And Roy Radden was a friend of Robert Evans. Robert Evans was the producer who created not only The Godfather and Cotton Club, but Rosemary's Baby.
Right.
And of course, Rosemary's Baby was, it was filmed, obviously, directed by Roman Polanski, whose wife was killed by Charles Manson, who was part of the Process Cult. Right? Nice. Robert Evans was a key character, and this is what I cover in Volume 6 in my chapter on Me Too, which is Chapter 4. And this is the entire Me Too network of Hollywood pedophiles. And so Robert Evans is a key character in that nasty business.
Really? Wow. So, I didn't know that.
Know that at all. So this is where, you know, this is the chapter where I connect all these people. This is back to Roy Cohn again, Studio 54, Donald Trump, Jeffrey Epstein, Netanyahu, his crew, like Terry Packer, who's a friend of Murdoch, right? The guy who brought Murdoch to the United States and introduced him to Ronald Reagan is Roy Cohn.
Wow, that's off the charts. And he's like a rival of Maxwell. So these characters are intertwined and moving around.
It's a small network of international Satanists. Right?
And Manson famously said, Robert de Grimson and I are one.
Right.
He said that. You don't trip and make that statement on record. No. I'm sorry. People cross over his occult network and all his connections to Kenneth Anger through Bobby Bisley, but it's all there. Sorry. But these connections are off the charts.
This is another tangent I found, which is really fascinating. So Mary Ann McLean, who was the co-founder of the Process Church with Robert de Grimstone, she was formerly a high-class prostitute in the employ of a guy named Dr. Stephen Ward. So Dr. Stephen Ward is basically, he was a osteopath to the elite in England. he treated everybody. He started his career by becoming friends with Avril Harriman.
That's right.
White Skull and Bones. And then became friends with everybody, starting with Churchill and entire network. So he also pimped a number of girls, most famously Christine Keeler. Christine Keeler was at the heart of what's called the Profumo scandal of 1963, because she was sleeping at the same time with John Profumo and the Russian ambassador. And when it was exposed, it was considered a huge national security risk, and it brought down the Macmillan government. But what's interesting, Kennedy was panicking and following that whole scandal very closely because he was implicated. He basically was sleeping around with a number of Stephen Ward's girls. So now, one of the most important families, you know, in the last century, particularly behind the fascist movement, I mentioned a few of them, like the DuPonts, but the Mellons are crucial. Most of them were involved in the OSS. You know, they were among the top five or the richest, the top five richest families in the United States. So what
happened? They were tied to Leary, right? Wasn't one
that's where I was going to go. Okay, so David Bruce, who is the appointed American ambassador by Kennedy, he gets sent to England to check out what the heck is going on, and he's sent to go meet with Stephen Ward and Billy Hitchcock, who was Leary's buddy, who funded Leary's experiments. He owned the Millbrook estate.
Millbrook. Right.
That was really Leary's mecca that drew everybody from the 60s, including the Merry Pranksters and the whole crew.
And there was Leary went and met with the Process Church in New York City. There was arguments or rumors that he was a brief member or maybe a member or some connection.
That would make
there.
Sense. But, that would make sense.
So you totally confirmed that McClane was Stephen Ward's that was confirmed.
Girl. Wow, yeah, funny. Exactly.
And I did an interview with the Thomas Douglas called Scapegoat about that whole case. So I talked about it because he got wasted. Yeah.
So what's interesting is that Keeler wrote a memoir, and she's very clear about it. That's deep. So this is what's really interesting. I talked earlier about the Cliveden set, right? The Cliveden set, which is basically another name for Roundtable Group. They're based out of the Cliveden house that was owned by Nasty Astor. And that's really the bee's nest, the hornet's nest that attracted all these Nazi collaborators in England. And there's actually a whole chapter on it in volume 3. So her son is Lord Astor. And so he's the guy, basically he lends a cottage at Cliveden to Stephen Ward.
That's right. Wow.
So what Keeler describes, Christine Keeler describes, is that it's there that Ward used to host Masonic black magic orgies. Yeah. So basically exactly, you know, the Eyes Wide Shut kind of scenario. This is what we're talking about. And this is that these parties that he introduced his girls to people like Profumo and Ivanov and so on and so forth. So here we have, you know, an open and shut case about satanic ritual, you know, sex magic taking place among the elites. And it's the Mellon family who are at the heart of it. So David Bruce, he was married to the sister of Paul Mellon. And Paul Mellon was really the, you know, the most important Mellon of his time. Again, probably listed as one of the richest people in the United States at the time. Also worked for the OSS with Alan Dulles. So now, Paul Mellon, he and his wife were the main financiers of what are called Aranos conferences. So to understand the birth of the New Age movement and Esalen, like Michael Murphy said that Esalen was based, he took the Aranos conferences as a model for the founding of the Esalen Institute. So the Aranos conferences were founded by a woman who was a friend of Alice Bailey in the late 1920s. And it's a whole host of characters, a lot of occultists from the OTO, from Theosophy, from Rudolf Steiner's Anthroposophy, and who basically gathered together to create these. In fact, it took place in Ascona, which I don't know if you ever heard of Monteverde. So in volume two.
Volume two, yeah. Let's go.
Volume two, chapter called Sex. Sorry, volume three. Volume three. It's near the top, eugenics and sexology. This entire network that includes basically people like Freud, because Freud was a Sabbatian, right? And what these, so what all these Sabbatians are out to do is to overturn, you know, the society's moral foundation. And they come out of the Fabian Society, which creates the eugenics movement, and they create sexology. And this is where you get a guy, the influence of a guy like George Sylvester Viereck, Crowley's friend, because he's friends with that whole network of sexologists.
Wow. Crazy.
And so a lot of these characters then start to become connected to Monteverde in Ascona in Switzerland, which is a sort of considered the first hippie community, like a bohemian community that experimented in all kind of, you know, alternative lifestyles. It was basically a theosophical community. One of the main influences there was a guy named Otto Gross, who was one of Freud's students, and worked with Jung as well too. And Jung, of course, is the guy. If you've read about Jung and his interest in occults, I mean, his ideas were pervaded with occult influences. If you ever look at his red book and all that stuff, he apparently made contact with a spirit guide called Philemon and stuff like that, right?
Right.
So now Jung teams up with this lady, Olga, in Ascona to create the Aranos conferences. So Jung basically becomes really the chief, figure in this movement. And it's really, you know, most of the leading scholarly books, classics of the 20th century, are almost all written by people who belong to the Aranos Foundation. People like Mirkei Eliade, who's a friend of Julius Evola. You know, Joseph Campbell, of course, which is a key guy.
I mean, it's amazing.
Carl Carini, E.M. Cornford, Amory Schimmel, who's an expert in Islamic Sufism, Massignon. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on.
It's just incredible. Your books give so much dimension to the history that we're taught, even in college, even like graduate level. They don't have this undercurrent that's really, in my opinion, is the most important aspect, is these familial connections, the esotericism or occultism.
Yeah.
And it just is, it's all been expurgated or sanitized or bleached out of it. It's just, it doesn't tell the full story of a lot of these guys. Sorry.
You're not allowed to have a thesis that assumes the existence of a conspiracy. You'll be kicked out. You'll never get a degree. So effectively, you know, academia is designed to deny the existence of any kind of conspiracy.
It's amazing. It's hard to think that. Yeah.
So it's the key that allows you to connect all the dots, right? And to understand why these people share these ideas and what they're really up to. But of course they teach coincidence theory, which is just, you know, a random string.
Talking with you, it's like blowing my mind, like the connections too, because you just filled out stuff about Viereck and all these other characters that are all going back in time. It really is. It's really important to see those historical connections. So I wish we had more time. Maybe you can come back. I have another interview where I'm going to talk about LBJ. It was an interesting character, but it's really a delight. Thanks for coming back on. And really, congratulations on this important work and putting together that six part together. If you're on YouTube, you can see that. Where's the best place for people to get your books?
Yeah, if they go to my website, which is ordoapcao.ca, and then I've got links too. So the entire book is actually online in, you know, as text in those web pages, or you can buy the paper version. And there's a link to there's a single page on Amazon, which lists all the volumes, and there's a link to it from there.
Gotcha. It's David Livingstone with an E at the end. And you have a Patreon too. So if people want to support your continuing research and follow you, I think that's important too, because you're giving this book away, which is incredible for zero, unless people want the books.
Yeah.
But congratulations again. And just a great interview, you know, I mean, amazing research. Great. So really appreciate it. David Livingstone, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye. Stay there.